Monday, July the 15th, 2019. My name is Ken Thompson, and I'm the chair of the Duplin County Board of Commissioners. Listen, prayer.
Bow your heads. Heavenly Father, thank you for blessing us with this day. Thank you for bringing the citizens of Duplin County out to hear the county business and participate in decision-making that we are about to take on today. Thank you for blessing our families, law enforcement, emergency services, the elderly, and every citizen that we have in this county. Thank you, Jesus, for blessing us each and every day. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, has everyone had a chance to review the consent agenda? Does anyone on the board have anything to add?
No, I do not.
I do not.
Mr. Brinson?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, if it pleases the board, I would like to add a item to the regular agenda, the county attorney, Ms. Savory, to present an ordinance declaring a road closure for a community reunion for the board's consideration. And I'd also like to add, in addition to the other closed session you already have on your agenda, a closed session for personnel pursuant to North Carolina General Statute 143.318A6.
Okay, I will entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So move.
Second.
It's been moved and properly seconded. We do so. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Do we have any public comments for tonight? Right. First up, we have Andrew Reed. Good evening, Mr. Reed.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. I was a EMS provider here in the county for 2 years. Due to medical conditions, I've had to step away after 26 years. But I know how hard it is trying to make a living on what they make hourly, and I want to propose something to you guys that should be a win-win for everybody, and that would be to see if you guys would create a beverage tax of 5 cents in the county. I stopped by because I was thirsty and I bought me a soda. It was $1.89 and there's 13 cents of tax. I don't know what the 13 cents tax goes to. It's state, federal, whatever. I paid the money, didn't even think about it. But with 5 cents tax, several states and cities have done this since the early 90s. Recently, Seattle put in a soda tax because they were trying to decrease the amount of sugar that children would drink. In their first quarter, they got $4.7 million in revenue. Now, granted, I know that's Seattle versus us, so I've made it even a little simpler so it would be easier for this county. I asked the lady at Speedway over here in Kingsville, this is one store, one item, that's coffee. 3,500 cups a month they sell. That's $175 a month if you put a 5 cent tax on it. For a year, that's $2,100. That's just on coffee. If you did it on everything, that's soft drinks, sport drinks, coffee, tea, anything that's not milk or water, because those are necessities that need to be provided without additional taxes. On $1 million sales, that'd be $50,000 a year in revenue that could be put into a fund specifically for payroll for the sheriff's department and EMS. You divide it 50%, it's a win-win for them. On $1 million, that's $25,000 a year minimum, just on $1 million of revenue that the department heads could use towards their payroll, which would increase pay for the paramedics and EMS and sheriff's department deputies. It would show a morale because it's showing them that you guys instilled this on their behalf. It's a win-win. The department heads have extra money to be able to recruit and keep their people. The community is a win because they get to have 8 staff paramedic ambulances and sheriff deputies, and they know they're going to be there when they call 911. Me, I'm going to win out of this because of the fact that I have several friends who are EMS and sheriff's department that I consider my brothers and sisters. Many of them are here tonight. Even though I'm not still functioning as a paramedic in this county, they're still my brothers and sisters. And by you approving this, it would make me feel better knowing that my brothers and sisters are being taken care of by the their employers. So I just ask that you guys would look at possibly doing some research on that and instill a 5-cent beverage tax in the county for all beverages other than milk and water. And that's really all I have to say. But I appreciate your guys' time and your consideration.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Savory, can you explain to Mr. Reed a few things? Can you explain that to him? Thanks. Next up, we have Angel Wallace.
Okay. Over the last few months, it's come to my attention that our EMS system is not where it needs to be with personnel, consistent pay and base pay, consistent coverage and base pay. I chose to speak today because I work with some of the most vulnerable population, medically complex babies and young children. These are children that have brain tumors, CP, trachs, seizures that are life-threatening. Many of the families depend on EMS if their child has a life-threatening seizure or just stopped breathing. They should not have to worry if they call for an ambulance in emergency that there will be one available in their area. Are y'all going to be able to explain to a parent that you could not fund EMS when their child has died en route to the hospital because there's no money that you can pay for all these medics? I also have a parent that has complex medical condition that requires some detailed care, which I just left so that I could attend this meeting. If we have to call EMS for him, he could possibly die on the way because what he needs in interventions only a medic could provide. The county needs paramedics that can provide life-saving procedures to be on every truck during every shift without having to shut down sites due to the lack of personnel or overworking the few people that have remained loyal to the county when they can go 20 minutes down the road and make $2 to $4 more dollars. To recruit and retain these individuals, the county must provide a competitive pay. The medical director and the EMS administration have presented several options for your consideration. I think you'll be doing the community that you've been elected to represent a huge disservice if you decide on any other than the first option to fund this competitive pay system that will provide the opportunities for recruitment and retention. When there's not consistent broad coverage for EMS service with a paramedic on board, then it's a danger for everyone. What if it was your family, your child, your grandpa, your other family member that needs to be transported with that paramedic level care? Do you want a basic truck to come in and pick them up and watch them have to die on the way to the hospital? We really need to think about that because in a lot of these cases, that's the reality, especially with these children that I serve. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Wallace. Next, we have Thurman Herring.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, staff, audience, I don't have no ideas on how to raise money, but there's only one way. That's probably raise taxes. But I'm in favor of keeping all 8 ambulances. Nobody, regardless of where they live, should have to wait for an extended time for an ambulance to get there because ambulances have been closed down. Now, we've been through this. It's kind of like Groundhog Day. Several years ago, we went through this same thing when we shut down trucks. Nobody. I don't know. I know most of the people here is in favor of keeping 8 trucks and, of course, paying the people a living wage that they can do this. I don't think anybody is against that. And I believe if you could run a poll in the county and it'd be fairly administered, I think you'd have a high percentage of people that live in Newport County, the citizens, and people just traveling through. We want everybody to have good EMS. And that's not all I got to say about it, but I appreciate it. But maybe just do what you have to do. Keep our trucks on the road, pay our people, and let's keep this attrition from going completely wild. It's already gone out of sight. Let's take care of our people. And all the people, the paid people, the citizens, just give us what we need. You got, you all can do it, and I think the people would be proud of it. I know I would be, and thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Terry. Clayton Bryant. See him in here. Is Clayton Bryant in there?
Good evening, Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here. It's an honor and a privilege. I brought me a guest tonight. This young lady's name is Roxana Lobo. Just to give you a little background on her, about 10 years ago, there was an effort to shut down two EMS units. At that particular time, she came with me and we approached the Commissioners. I was driving a school bus and she had a respiratory illness that she couldn't get rid of. And on at least five occasions while I was driving that school bus, she quit breathing or almost quit breathing. But in either case, she turned just as blue as her shirt. And if it had not been for the interventions of paramedic level care at that point, she would not be here today. Now keep in mind, she was maybe 8 or 9 at that time. She's 19 and she just graduated high school. And I feel like that's because of her hard work. But no less important was the fact that there was paramedic level care provided to her. One other thing I wanted to mention to you, just as early as the 13th, which was 2 or 3 days ago, we had a unit shut down. We had a unit running as a basic with a paramedic supervisor, and then we had a unit that was a basic truck. Wallace, the station in Wallace was on a call. The station in Rose Hill was shut down. Wallace had another call, Rose Hill, I don't remember, but anyway, the unit from Chinquapin covered that call. Before they could get to that call, the Warsaw truck, which was a basic truck, had a call. The paramedic supervisor that was helping staff the truck in Keenansville had to leave that truck, in essence shutting it down, to respond to the call in Warsaw. So at that point, you in essence had no immediate coverage from Fountaintown to Wallace on the 41-111 corridor, and then on 117 from Wallace to Bowden. There was no truck. And then keep in mind, Keenansville didn't have a truck, the Green Rivers area community didn't have a truck, and all those areas in between did not have a truck. I used to be a police officer. One of the most helpless feelings in the world is going to a call and seeing somebody that's in cardiac arrest and you're having to do what you can. Now on this particular call, the ambulance that was in the district, it was back when we were volunteers, but the ambulances were on a call, and it doesn't matter that it was a volunteer then or paid now. I, as an officer, had to do CPR on that gentleman for an extended period of time. And the whole time I'm working on this individual, his family saying, please save him. Save my granddaddy. Save my husband. And I'm going to tell you, every call I've ever been on, there's ever been a death, such as traffic, whatever, I've never forgotten it. I live it every day. I can ride down the road and give out fatality, where a fatality happened, and it's like a wheel just starts turning. And I see those things every day. What I'm asking is that you guys, I know it's a matter of dollars, but I also ask that you look at a face like this, a young lady who knows what she's going to be able to accomplish. It's difficult because I know you got to maintain a balance. But it's not really difficult when you look and say there's one life that was saved because of a paramedic. And I just ask that, you know, whichever option you choose or whichever option is decided on, I hope and pray is to keep the ambulances staffed as they are, because if you shut one truck down, it just throws everything out of balance. And I know some of you I don't, but I trust in my heart that you guys and ladies will look and consider, you know, what I've told you. I will say that the paramedics and the EMTs and the intermediates that I know that work in EMS, they're very dedicated. They work hard. They're proud of what they do. I'm proud of what they do. And I know, again, like I say, I know it's not a popular situation, but I ask that you really look at yourself, look at your family, because it may not be a Roxana next time. It could be one of your family members. And if that truck's not there to take the call, they may not be there to stand with you the next time you need to show them off. So if you would, just consider what I've asked and try to rule in favor of keeping the truck staffed and the pay increase as requested. Thank you.
Thank you, Clay. Okay, it looks like next we have the Duplin County Babe Ruth All-Stars. Are they here? Hello.
Good evening.
Hello.
I feel kind of bad coming in here asking for a donation for these ladies when everybody's needing a pay raise. But they have worked really hard for your county, too. They have went and played... Get them hungry. They went and played 7 days in 100-degree heat and brought y'all the title home for state. Now, they've been invited to go to the World Series in Florida, but they need a little help to get there. We are asking for a donation to get 10 of these little girls to go. And they're going to try their best to bring y'all home a World Series title. Do you want to say anything? They're shy until you get them on the ball field. You get them on the ball field and then they're wide open.
Could we have their names and ages, please?
Yes, you have Rebecca Beach, 10 years old. Kenzie Cave, 9 years old. Shyla Sloan, 11 years old. And Holland Thickman, 10 years old.
And the team consists of how many?
10.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other 6 had a prior engagement tonight and couldn't be here.
Okay.
It's for our county too, so. But these are the 4 that could come, and we decided we'd come up here and see what y'all tell us.
We've been to the World Series before, and we've been pretty successful so far.
Well, congratulations on your state championship. Good luck in the World Series. When is the tournament?
They have to be there on the 25th to check in, and they have the Babe Ruth experience, and so we'll be leaving on the 24th.
Okay, great. What says the board?
I make a motion that we do like we've done in the past for all teams that have come before us and award you $500 for your trip.
Thank you very much.
I second.
It's been moved and properly seconded that we donate $500 to the Duplin County Babe Ruth All-Stars for their trip to the World Series in Florida.
Yes, sir.
The week of July 25th.
Yeah, the 25th through August 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you so much.
And before you ladies leave, let's keep up the good work because women are stepping up these days.
Yes, they are.
Thank you.
All right. First up on our agenda, we have Mr. Brinson, who I think has an introduction for us. The first item on the agenda, you have someone to introduce.
Ben Hardy.
It's a pleasure to meet everybody. Good.
Ben's a little anxious. This is his first meeting. I want to introduce to the board your new Cabin Lake Park Superintendent, Ben Hardy. Ben was born and raised here in Kenansville. He comes to us from the school system where he was a middle school teacher for many years at E. Smith, and he came directly to us from Kenansville Elementary. I think what speaks volumes about Ben's commitment to the park is he's been working out there for over 11 and a half years part-time. So he knows the park, he knows the procedures, and I think he's going to be a real asset to the county. I've asked Ben to come and say just a few words to let you get to know him a little bit better. Thank you.
Don't have a lot to say. I know I gave y'all my goals for this new fiscal year. Just like y'all to go over them, please get up with me. I'd like to meet each and every one of y'all individually, go over your goals for the park, any changes you'd like to see happen, what can we do to improve it. Always open So please just get up with me. Does anybody have any questions for me?
You got some big shoes to fill.
Very big.
And I hope you'll continue his legacy.
That's our goal. It's definitely our goal.
And may I add to that? You did not rush in for this appointment. You held the door for me today. So you know you got my vote.
Thank you.
We wish you well, man.
Thank you.
I'll be out there to see you.
I know you'll do well.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome aboard.
Thank y'all so much.
Okay.
Everybody's wanting all this extra money, and we can't keep air conditioning on in this place.
Really? Is it going as far as it can go?
Is it really?
All right.
We have Ms. Simmons Carnegie with the Health Department. There you are.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, fellow commissioners. I come before you guys tonight with four specific agenda items. The first one relates to the Board of Health. I'd like to request appointment of Dr. Tina Joelle Kennedy Parker and Dr. Erica H. Brown and Eileen Carr Gear to the Board of Health for their first three-year term starting July 2019 through July 2022. Dr. Parker will be replacing Dr. A.J. Bullard as the dentist. Dr. Brown would be replacing Dr. Dan Robinson as the optometrist, and Ms. Aileen Carr Gear will be replacing Robert Chad Herring as a public member. Both Drs. Bullard and Robinson have served on the County Board of Health since 2004, and Robert Chad Herring has served since 2013. I'm also requesting reappointment of Dr. Chad Carnegie as the physician and Mr. Craig Westerbeek as the public member to the Board of Health. For Dr. Carnegie will be his second third-year term, three-year term, and for Mr. Westerbeek will be his sixth three-year term. So also requesting acceptance of Dr. Margie Hunter, veterinarian, as the new Board of Health chairman for the next 3 years. She was voted unanimously at the June 13th Board of Health meeting to replace Mr. Craig Westerbeek as the previous Board of Health chairman.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and properly second that we reappoint Dr. Chad Herring and Mr. Craig Westerbeek
as public member.
As a public member and to appoint Dr. Kennedy Parker, Dr. Brown, and Ms. Carr Greer to the Board of Health, and also to appoint Margie Hunter as the chairman. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. For the second agenda item, it's there's multiple things within that too, as it relates to the public health nursing positions that we currently have at the health department. From fiscal year 17-18, there was merit raises that were given to all county employees. There were several public health nursing positions that received some salary grade adjustments due to exceeding their steps within their current grade. Per state personnel, the relative differential for all salary grades within an occupational grouping, but for nurses it's 5002, must be the same. As a result of other adjustments to the county grades, any active position within the occupational grouping must have a salary grade that is one higher than the state grade. And you guys can see the graph that we got from state personnel in the agenda. Therefore, I am requesting approval to reclassify the PHN2 positions from a grade 72 to a grade 73. Back in 2007, the previous health director came before the Board of Commissioners and was given approval for the steps to begin at a 4B for nurses. So I'm requesting that we reclassify the current PHN2 positions from a grade 72 to a 73, as well as the starting salary to be at a step 4B. Which would mean our starting salaries for our public health nurses is $47,118.
What is the impact on the current budget?
Do what, sir?
What is the impact on the current budget?
Due to the upcoming retirements that we have, and I'll go over in a minute, there will not be it'll stay the same. I'm not asking for any additional money.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and properly second that we approve to reclassify the current public health nurse two positions from grade 72 to a grade 73 and move the starting salary for the public health nurse two position to be at a grade 73 step 4B.
Correct.
Outline that correctly.
Yes.
Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, so the second step as it relates to public health nursing. The health department currently has 15 total nursing positions, including a nursing director who's going to retire in 2020, a clinic nursing supervisor retiring in November 2019, maternal health program manager retiring in September 2019, wellness program manager retiring in 2023, and a communicable disease nurse retiring in 2023. Three of the 15 nursing positions are funded only by state dollars for the high-risk children and pregnant women for care management, therefore leaving 13 nursing positions that are funded from a mixture of sources, grant funds, state dollars, and county appropriation. Currently, seven of the 13 nursing positions have over 10 years of experience, including five of those seven are in management or program-led positions, as previously mentioned. To mention, we currently have two vacant nurse, two positions, and those are not up for retirement. In the agenda request, there were specifics included on the health department's mission without the qualified trained public health nurses that we would not be able to carry out our mission for the county. Without the experienced nursing staff to orient and mentor new nursing staff, we cannot effectively train and get the new nurses up to speed. Within public health, those nurses have to have at least 1 year of public health experience. It is not like taking a nurse from the hospital or from a private practice and putting at the health department. There's other things that we have to work on to get them up to speed. It is critical that we retain new staff after 12 months of employment due to their lengthy and costly orientation that each new public health nurse must go through before functioning on their own. Therefore, I am requesting approval to adjust current salaries for the public health nurses based on education level, the associate degree nurse, bachelor's and master's prepared nurses, as well as their years of public health experience, as well as adjust current salaries for any public health nurse with less than 5 years of experience to help with recruitment and retention. Currently, we have four public health nurses that are less than 5 years, and then we would have two vacancies. That's a total of six of our 15 positions that have less than 10 years of experience. And there is no change on the budget if we were to adjust based off of education level. The last request.
Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Give me just a second. All right. It's been moved and properly second that we adjust the current salaries for the public health nurses based on education levels and years of public health nursing experience, as well as adjust current salaries of any public health nurse with less than 5 years of experience. Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries.
The last request related to public health nurses is to allow the health director to negotiate starting salaries for new hired public health nurses based on education levels and years of public health nursing experience. And that plan was presented to you guys.
Okay. So moved.
I second that.
It's been moved and properly second that we approve to allow the health director to negotiate starting salaries above a rate of grade 73 step 4B for public health nurses based on education levels and years of public nursing experience. Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries.
Third agenda is the Child Fatality Prevention Team. North Carolina State Article 14-7B-1406 and the Health Department CFPT Agreement Agenda requires local CFPTs to advocate for system improvement and needed resources where gaps and deficiencies may exist and submit an annual report to the local county commissioners and Board of Health. This is to identify deficiencies in the delivery of services to children and families by public agencies, make and carry out recommendations for changes that will prevent future child deaths and promote understanding of the causes of child deaths. I come before you tonight to request that two members, we need someone from law enforcement and emergency services to represent on this 16-member board. So I'm requesting appointment of Edward Johnson, detective from the Sheriff's Department, and Robert Bob Houston, director of emergency services, as the EMS representative.
So moved.
It's been moved and properly second that we appoint Detective Johnson and Director Bob Houston as the EMS representative to the Child Fatality Prevention Team. Detective Johnson would be the Sheriff's Department representative. Questions or comments? Yeah. Alvin, go ahead.
How many people do you have on that board right now?
There are 16.
All of
well, 14, and then those two will be 16.
So all of the positions are filled except for these two that you're trying to call.
Yes. But you can come if you want. Public members. All right.
Any other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Yes, ma'am.
All right, the fourth agenda item is for acceptance and approval to receive the Vidant Health Community Benefits Grant. This is a grant that the Health Department applied through Vidant Health Community Benefits Program, grant program, to continue to focus on chronic disease prevention and management. This goes towards our diabetes program we have at the Health Department to promote self-management, prevention of complications, and improve quality of life. So we were awarded a grant for $15,500 for the next year.
This is an ongoing thing every year? It's renewal or you have
to reapply? We have to reapply every year.
So all the money we can get.
It's been moved and properly seconded that we accept the Vidant Health Community Benefits grant in the amount of $15,500 and approve the necessary budget amendment. Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, ma'am.
First and second. Y'all get that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have Ms. Angie Quinn from Soil and Water next.
Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Good
evening. The first item I have is for another string debris removal project. This is for Taylor's Creek. It is out west of Rose Hill. We had a bid open on June 25th, and the Blackman Companies of Smithfield was the low bid in the amount of $64,350. I would like to ask that you award the Blackman Companies the contract for string debris removal in Taylor Creek.
So moved.
It's been moved and properly second that we approve to award the Taylor Creek stream debris removal project contract to the Blackman Company in the amount of $64,350. Questions? All in favor say aye. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ms. Lassen. Go ahead.
Blackwell, we've used them before?
Yes, ma'am. They did a very good job on our last project that we used to bid.
You know, it would be, what can I say, that since we are not able to go out into the field, if you took a picture of what they were doing and then showed us the before and hereafter, that way when you vote something in.
Ooh, goodness gracious.
Oh, heaven, that's a snake.
I didn't give him
that.
I did.
Oh, mercy.
This is, you know, you come in and you say these things and we don't see, but when you bring what it was before and what has happened later, then you can easily go along, because sometimes you vote something in and then next thing you know you're accosted out in the street. Why did you vote for that? And all of that. This is great. Other departments, pass it on so they can see.
Any other questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
She likes pictures.
She does. So this was found in the debris, I guess?
Yes. There's a bunch of them. That was just one.
That's a
How long was it then?
I think it's about 4 foot.
That is a water moccasin, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. Anyway, pass that again. All right, go ahead.
The second one I have is another string debris removal project. This one, again, we had a bid open on June 25th, and the Blackman Companies of Smithfield was the low bidder in the amount of $269.25, and I would like to ask that you award the Blackman Companies the contract for string debris removal.
So moved.
It's been moved and properly seconded twice each time to approve to award the Halti Branch, Stevens Swamp, and Edwards Creek String Debris Removal Project to the Blackman Companies for $73,269.25. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion carries.
Thank you.
You know, I don't mean to interrupt you, but this is, you know, like something that people think this stuff just disappeared with osmosis, but you have to have folks set to work, because in rural USA, if you didn't have good contractors, we'd be beating them off at the door.
The next item I have is our annual BMAP program. We've been participating in this program since 2000. It is a, I'd like to ask you to approve the 2019-20 agreement with USDA APHIS Wildlife Services.
Is this, so moved.
Second, is this Reed and his
group? Yes, this is Reed and Chris.
So this is for what, the beavers?
Beaver,
right?
Yes, ma'am.
Nobody gonna wear beaver coats anymore?
All right, it's been moved and properly seconded that we approve the annual Beaver Management Assistance, Assistance Program Agreement between the County and the United States Department of Agricultural and Plant Health Inspection Services, and authorize me to sign the same. Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. I have one more.
Yes, ma'am.
Last year, I applied for a grant for a temporary position in our office, and we were awarded that grant. And I reapplied this year, and we have been given an extension on the same grant. So I'd like to ask that we still need the worker in there to continue to fund this position that is totally grant funded for our office.
Yes, sir.
It's been moved and properly seconded that we approve the extension of a temporary soil conservation technician position for an additional year. Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Are these for Ms. Lass and the Key?
Yes.
All right. I'll let you have those. All right. Next up we have Daryl Whaley.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, if I may, Daryl has been named interim solid waste director. With him, he has his assistant, Joy Pickett. Daryl has been with the solid waste department for 25 and a half years now, Daryl.
Yes, sir.
And he's the interim since the retirement of Kim Porter.
Good choice.
Good evening.
Hello.
How's everybody?
Good. How are you?
We're here today for ask permission to shut our transfer station down to have some floor work done. We've been working on this project for since 2016 it was started, and due to the pouring out of trash and construction, new construction, chicken houses, whatnot, storms, we've just been overwhelmed, haven't had a chance to have it fixed. But as time goes on, the price goes up. After every day, you're spending more money to keep the stuff going. There's pictures of the rocks coming through the concrete. We need it resurfaced. We've got a signed contract with Blair Duron, which does the Anvil top flooring, which is the same flooring we had put on it in 2007 when it was built. I suppose the last 10 years, it's gone past. So we have to stop it now and try to fix it. It's going to be a little inconvenience for some of our contractors, because we're going to have to send them to Sampson County. We're going to have to reroute them. But it's going to be no inconvenience for our citizens that pay the $90 household tax. We're going to carry on with their stuff just like normal. They're going to go to convenient sites, and our trucks are going to run straight to Sampson County. We have sent out letters saying that we will be closed through, if all's well, we'll be closed through August the 7th through August the 18th. It's going to take a 7-day cure time for this slurry topping, amble top they're going to put on it. Have contacted 95% of the business. We have the letter if anyone likes to look at it. But we are asking for a budget amendment of $10,238 to go with what we already had in line with it.
And the majority of this funding will be coming from the enterprise fund, correct?
Yes, sir.
So moved.
Let me make sure I understand what we're asking for here. So you're asking for the board to approve the shutdown of the transfer station from August 7th through August 18th, and to approve the project to fix what needs to be done at the transfer station for a cost of $76,738.
That's the total, yes, sir.
All of which comes from the enterprise fund, except for $10,238.
It would also come.
It would come from, yes, sir.
Okay,
so we already have the 66. We're just asking for the additional
from the enterprise fund.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. It's been moved. Was a motion made?
Doug made the motion.
Okay.
I'm all set.
All right. It's been moved and properly seconded that we approve the project for the transfer station to fix the floors for the amount of $76,738 and to approve the shutdown of the transfer station at Solid Waste from August 7th through the 18th. Does that cover everything? Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Look forward to working with you guys.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
All right. George here. Here he is. Next up, we have George Futrell.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and Board. Tonight, I have two items of business to present to you. The first would be a change order number one with Trader Construction Company. But before I ask you to approve the change order, I'm going to have to ask you to approve another bridge loan in the amount of $150,000. Regretfully, I left that amount out when County Manager Brinson presented that for me on July the 1st, and so I am $150,000 short of being able to award this change order. This would be the interfund loan, and so we have the approval from the bridge, the Red Leg loan. Once we receive those funds, it would be just like the bridge loan that was approved at the last meeting, that it would be repaid. But I can't approve the change order without the interfund loan. Would request that you do approve that and the associated budget amendment that goes along with that.
Clerk, comments? Can you respond?
Yeah. What will happen is once we receive final approval from the LGC on the Red Leg loan, the capital fund for the airport will pay the general fund back.
Okay. It's been moved and properly seconded that we approve the change order number one with Trader Construction in the amount of $772,659,000, authorizing me to sign the same and also approve a $150,000 bridge loan to help fund this.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any questions or comments? In addition, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item of business I have is a request for approval of a contract with Campbell Oil and Gas Company from Elizabethtown. The contract has been reviewed and approved by the county attorney. This is a five-year contract, professional services contract, to provide fuel service for the airport. I think I mentioned in the package that we are a branded Phillips 66 dealer, and so we are required to put out requests for proposals. And we did receive a proposal from Campbell Oil, and they are a Phillips 66 supplier. And the Airport Commission reviewed that proposal and has recommended to you approval for a five-year contract.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and properly seconded that we approve to enter into a professional services contract with Campbell Oil Company for the purpose of providing fuel services at the airport for a period of 5 years beginning July 15th of this year. Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
The motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. George, are you still?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Davis.
Mr. Chairman, the next item of business that we have tonight is to present to you a request to merge the reorganization request to merge the Tourism Development Authority with the Event Center. Over the last year, we have been in negotiation. The county manager and myself have been in negotiation with the Tourism Development Authority to manage the Event Center. This seems to be just such a good fit. You may recall that within the past year, we have done some extensive refurbishment to the event center, and we think that it's on the right path, and we're thankful for that, and we want to see it continue to prosper. We've done some extensive cleaning and painting, and I believe that was placed in your package as well, from help from other county departments that came together to help us get it back in good shape. And we're excited about this opportunity, and so tonight we would request that you approve the merger of these two departments and allow the Tourism Development Executive Director to become not only the Tourism Director, but the Events Center Director as well, and transfer their offices from the Soil and Water offices over to the Events Center office, where they would reside and where that would be that office would be managed full time.
I would mention that you're going from two full-time tourism employees and one full-time event center employee and one part-time event center employee to just three full-time employees. Okay. We think this is a good fit. Amanda is here tonight. She's going to market the event center for us in addition to her tourism duties. Mr. Tom Fife is here. He is the chairman of the TDA. He's available to answer any questions that you may have relevant to the TDA's role in this reorganization. But as George alluded to, we think this is a very good fit, and we think it's a win-win for both the TDA and for the County Event Center.
Okay, so moved.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and properly seconded that we approve this agreement between the County Board and the County Tourism Development Authority regarding the management of the event center. Will that cover everything you're asking for?
Need to approve the.
We have a memorandum of agreement with the between the county and the Tourism Development Authority regarding the management of the Duplin County Event Center.
Okay. Let's just do it one at a time.
I believe Mr. Commissioner Grady has.
I just have a question. Mr. Fike, do you have any comments? Is your board okay with this?
Yes, sir.
Tom.
Representing the board.
I'll need you to kind of speak to the mic.
That's all right.
Yes, sir. As Davis and George had said, we've talked about this for quite a while, and the board itself has been involved with it. And they are very much willing to make this move. They, as you know, have always been very supportive of the event center, want to see it continue to succeed. And as both George and Davis have said, we all feel that this is a good fit between the two organizations, and that bringing in Amanda, who has the marketing skills and other skills, will be an extremely good fit. So yes, the board is supportive of this.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion carries. Now we'll move on to, you wanted to read the
We'll read it in its entirety if you'd like for us to, Mr. Chairman.
Is it lengthy? Go ahead.
Agreement between the Duplin County Board of County Commissioners and Duplin County Tourism Development Authority regarding management of the Duplin County Event Center. This agreement made and entered into this 15th day of July 2019 between the Duplin County Board of Commissioners and the Duplin County Tourism Development Authority describes the understanding between DCBCC and DCTDA regarding the management of Duplin County Event Center, including the general responsibilities of both parties, and the initial length of the agreement and the terms of renewal and discontinuation of the agreement, responsibilities of the Tourism Development Authority. The Duplin County Tourism Development Authority will be responsible for the overall administration, management, and day-to-day operations of the Event Center, including scheduling of events, budget planning and management and marketing. The responsibilities of the county. The county will continue to provide the budget for the operation and maintenance of the event center, separate from the tourism budget. The county will also provide a salary and benefits supplement for the positions of tourism event center, executive director, and administrative assistant visitor services, as agreed upon by both parties. The county will also provide the full salary and benefits of the event venue services manager. It is understood that Duplin County would administer leave policies, position classification, and compensation and benefits for employees of the Duplin County Tourism Development Authority, and the same as applied to other part-time, full-time, and or temporary county employees. Length of the agreement in terms of renewal and discontinuation. The agreement will be for an initial two-year period, July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2021. At the end of 1 year, on June 30th, 2020, both parties agree to evaluate the effectiveness of the agreement and to make any adjustments mutually agreed upon. Before the end of year two, both parties will assess the effectiveness of the agreement and determine whether to continue or discontinue the agreement in whole or in part. Either party may decide on its own whether to discontinue this agreement at this time. Should the agreement be discontinued by either party, it is understood that the Duplin County Tourism Development Authority employees will retain their positions as employees of the Tourism Development Authority, exclusive of the supplemental portion of the salaries provided by the county for additional event center responsibilities.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brinson. I think we've approved that agreement that's in your packet through that previous motion. Do we need any other action to do the reorganization, or does that speak for itself within the agreement? I think it does. Okay. Any other action we need to take formally to get this moving?
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Craig Westerbeek. We have Mr. Westerbeek here from Smithfield.
If you don't mind, I'd like Mr. Ryan Childress to join me as well. From Dominion Energy.
Sure.
Not going to take a lot of your time tonight. I know you guys have heard and seen quite a few startup renewable energy projects here in Duplin County. We want to talk to you about what we think is a very exciting announcement. I'm going to spend a little bit of time first, though, talking about what is renewable natural gas. Renewable natural gas is methane that's captured from any source. It could be hog farms, it could be dairy farms, landfills, food waste, etc., that's converted into clean natural gas. The benefits of renewable natural gas is a huge greenhouse gas reduction, improved manure management on farms, around-the-clock renewable energy, and new revenue stream for family farmers. So when you look at turning hog manure into clean renewable natural gas, and I apologize I didn't introduce myself, I know many of you folks already. I'm with Smithfield Foods, Craig Westerbeek. I'm Senior Director of Smithfield Renewables, also responsible for all of our environmental compliance activities across the country in our hog production division. Ryan, maybe you want to introduce yourself as well.
Appreciate y'all having me.
I should have started with that, probably.
So, that's all right. I'm Ryan Childress from Richmond, Virginia. Work with Dominion Energy, manage our business development group. Also serve as Vice President of Business Development for Align RNG, which is our joint venture with Smithfield.
So getting back, because I know we got just a little bit of time, and in the interest of time, I didn't put our presentation up. I'm happy to send that to you in PowerPoint form if you'd rather see it that way. But turning hog manure into clean renewable energy really involves three steps. First, you have to capture methane at the farm. You do that either by covered lagoons or covered digesters on the farms. You guys have seen an example of that down here at Optima KV just outside of town. Then you convert, condition that gas, get the moisture out of it, you go to a central conditioning facility from there, transport either by underground pipeline or by trucks, and then that RNG is delivered to homes and businesses through the pipelines that are already established for those purposes. Capturing methane from hog farms, very similar as you go through your slide deck. How does that happen? The manure obviously goes from the buildings into a covered lagoon or a covered digester where bacteria break that manure down over 6 to 12 months. That process generates organic fertilizer and methane. The methane is generated from anaerobic digestion is then pumped to a central conditioning facility. And then it is cleaned of impurities, you end up with 99.5% CH4 after processing, and then that RNG can be distributed to homes and businesses in the area. Really tonight, what I want to focus on, and we're not here to ask you guys for anything. That's not our purpose. We wanted to make you aware of this new company, Align Renewables, as you hear about it and we start doing projects as we are currently, that you'll know who it is. You guys have known Smithfield for years. That's who I'm representing. The other partner is Dominion Energy. Dominion Energy is one of the largest electricity utilities and gas utilities in the country. We've partnered together in a $250 million joint venture to bring these projects to fruition across the country. It's a 50-50 joint venture that we put together in 2018. Once again, we plan on spending $250 million over the next 10 years, not only here in North Carolina, while that might be primarily the state, but also projects we have going on in Missouri and in Utah. Ryan, maybe you want to talk a little bit about the power we'll create, and since you're an expert in that area, tell them a little bit about that.
Sure. So, you know, on our side of the partnership, you know, we're a pipeline company, power company. Assets in 18 states, but if you look on the slide 7, this kind of talks a little bit about the you know the opportunity around these first four projects, two of which are here in southeastern North Carolina. When you look at converting the energy you have here, you know, half of these first two projects, you're looking at powering about 7,000 homes and businesses, and also you know, reducing the amount of greenhouse gas produced by capturing that fugitive methane. It's equal to planting almost 15 million new trees, about 14 million. And so, you know, we all hear about renewable energy. There's a lot of solar being built in North Carolina. Kind of going over to the next slide, what we really like about the gas piece of this, in addition to the greenhouse gas reduction, you come all the way back on slide 9. The great thing about natural gas, it's available all the time. Solar, you know, obviously need the sun to shine. Wind, you need the wind to blow. But with Smithfield's operations always being going on, you're creating gas that can be available for energy use 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We also are really excited about the opportunities this presents for farmers here in Duplin County and across the state of North Carolina. In other states where we're doing this, they're primarily company-owned farms. I'm not telling anybody in this room anything they don't know. Here in North Carolina, we have a lot of really good family farmers that we do business with, Smithfield and other integrators. We consider this in our plan, and our projects really revolves around this being a new revenue stream for those farmers. And so waste management, you know, I think our industry does a fantastic job with that. This enhances that. And it's generally at a significant cost to producers to handle their manure properly. RNG, creating RNG on their farms, allows farmers to turn that major cost driver into a new revenue stream. We will actually pay on long-term contract for renewable natural gas or for natural gas that's produced on the farm on a 10-year offtake contract. And so farmers can invest in building the infrastructure on their farms, be that a covered lagoon or a covered digester. We'll give them a long-term offtake for that gas that'll make them money over time. The last slide, I think it's the last slide or one of the last slides in our deck, really looks at what does this look like. And so you see a map. This is not exactly correct, as there'll be many different clusters of farms. Our plans long-term over the next 5 to 10 years have developed 10 clusters here in North Carolina, with at least half of those being in Duplin and Sampson County. We said we want 90% of finishing farms over a certain size to be involved in biogas projects in the next 10 years. We hope to accelerate that greatly. But this gives you an idea of the spoke and hub concept of this, where you have a central location where you clean biogas and the farms around that supply that biogas at the injection site. To be sold to a utility, possibly California for transportation fuels. There's a lot of different markets for this gas. So with that, I wanted to leave a little time for questions, and I guess I have. The last slide gives you contact information for me. For those of you that aren't familiar with me, even though I am a resident of Duplin County, I appreciate you guys. I wasn't here. I was on a flight back from New York, but I appreciate you as the chairman of the Board of Health. I appreciate you guys acting on our request earlier tonight, but I'm right here in the county if you ever have any questions, but also Ryan with Dominion Energy as well. Yes, ma'am.
Question.
Please.
Why are you using lagoons instead of septic tanks?
Excuse me?
instead of septic tanks, are you using lagoons? Lagoons are on top of the ground.
Yes. Why would you not use a septic tank? An anaerobic lagoon is much more protective of the environment, in my opinion. Anaerobic lagoon and spray field is much more protective of the environment than a septic tank, in my opinion. In this particular case, it would be a covered lagoon or covered digester along with the existing lagoon on the farm. So I'm happy to spend more time with you going through that if you'd like.
I really would.
Anytime. Give me a call. Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah, the just looking at this map for the candidates for participant farms, I see that the majority of the farms that you kind of looked at as participants are located in Sampson and Duplin County.
That's where the majority of swine farms are in the state. That would be correct. Although there would be clusters of farms in Bladen County, in Pender County, in Greene County, and other parts of the state that would be attractive as well. I'm in a hurry because I didn't want to go over time. Because I know there's a lot of important business tonight. But just on that map, the pink dots would represent swine facilities. So yes, they would be clustered in this area. Yes.
Craig, do the farms that you've identified in the cluster areas have to be within the close proximity to the natural gas line?
Fairly close proximity. They don't have to be near. Our first project is called the Grady Road Project. It's actually going to be right on the Sampson-Duplin County line. It's going to involve 21 farms. Some of those are as far as 10 miles away from where the interconnect will be. So you do have capacity, so long as you can get right of ways to put gathering pipeline in, you do have the capacity to get further away. I will tell you, in Missouri, even currently, we're actually cleaning gas, putting it to trailer, and hauling it to a point for injection. So that's an opportunity as well if farms happen to be too far away from the pipeline.
Okay, at the interconnect, how many farms can actually tie into one?
There's really no limit there. It would really be based on, and I'm going to get into your area a little bit, how much there are a certain tariff amount of renewable gas that can go into a natural gas pipeline, so it would be dependent somewhat on the amount of natural gas that's carried by the transportation line. But typically, we would not be able to saturate that in any particular location. To get an interconnect point in North Carolina approved, you have to go through the North Carolina Utilities Commission, and they would speak on behalf of Piedmont Natural Gas, or I guess indicate you guys own a gas company here PSNC. As well, PSNC, they'd have to get approval for that interconnect to be able to put gas into the pipeline.
But we'll try to work with Piedmont to find places that are mutually acceptable. You know, a pipeline that's large enough, that's got enough capacity, and site it that way. So we'll have an ongoing conversation with them about the best place to put the actual interconnect.
So if you see these orange lines on this map, they would represent where there are existing transmission lines that could accept gas. Any other questions? Thank you so much. I appreciate your time this
Thank
evening.
You. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, would you be willing to present other presentations on that for us to be?
Excuse me?
I said, would you be willing to present other presentations on this?
Absolutely, sir. Anytime. Yes, if you've got a group in mind or someone you'd like me to present it to, I'd be happy to do that. Even in more detail here for Duplin County, if you'd like. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, we'll take about a 5-minute recess. We'll be back at 7:15 according to the clock here in the commissioner's room. We're going to start back and press on. Next up, we have Mr. Billy Yergin. Did I miss something? I did. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I skipped ahead. I was getting too excited there. Priscilla Dingle. I'm sorry.
Good evening.
Good. Hi.
I'm Priscilla Dingle, North Carolina Partnership Specialist with the Department of Commerce, U.S. Census Bureau.
and I would like to present to you some information concerning the 2020 census. I promise you I won't be long. I'll try to make it short. The good news is I'm not asking for money, but I am trying to get funds into this county. So that's the good news. I'm going to give you some folders of information that I've compiled.
Thank you.
And this is just, you're welcome. This is information, you're welcome. You can look at it at your leisure. You don't have to follow it alongside the PowerPoint. We're in the process of preparing for the 2020 census. Can I move this up some so I can see?
Sure.
Okay. We're in the process of preparing for the 2020 census. I'm a North Carolina specialist with the Department of Commerce out of the Atlanta Regional Office, which are the different states. Those are the different states that are under that region. I do reside in Onslow County, which is in North Carolina, of course, and Duplin County is one of my counties that I have. I have eight other counties, and Duplin County is also one of my counties. So in the process of preparing for the 2020 census, you can go to the next one. We're going to the different counties to make sure all of the county governments and the city governments are ready to prepare everybody within the community for the 2020 census. So we're trying to motivate people to respond. I'll go over that later on as far as the different ways that you can respond. But we're trying to make sure that everybody in the county is counted. Everyone should be counted once and in the right place. And what we mean by the right place is that everyone should be counted in the county that they reside in or the city that they reside in. So count it once and in the right place. We have such a short time. We've already started. We're in the educational phases right now. Like I mentioned, we're meeting with all of the county government, the city government, and then we're branching out into the organizations, the businesses within the different counties. We have such a short time to get all of this information in. The census day is April 1st, 2020 of next year. And after the census has been taken, the following months after that, we have to get all of that information in on the president's desk by December 31st, 2020. So we have, you know, it may seem like, you know, we have a while to do that, but actually we have a short time to do that. So we're in the process of basically educating everyone about the 2020 census. The goal of the census 2020 is, as I said, to count everyone once, only once, and in the right place. And everyone counts. A lot of people don't even know what the 2020 census is, and those of you that don't know, and those of you that are familiar with it, it's something that's been established since 1790, so it's nothing that's new. It's been around for a long time. It's done every decade. Every 10 years is when it's usually held. And we're ready for the decennial is what we call it, the decennial, which is the 2020 census, and we're preparing for that right now. It's that time. We're preparing all of the counties to participate because it has an impact, a political impact, and it has a what we call an economic impact. And the economic impact is that over $675 billion is distributed, and this is federal funding. It's distributed throughout the state and local governments that use the census numbers. And this is over $4 trillion within a 10-year period. So that's a lot of funding, a lot of funding. And the only way that counties can actually receive this funding is based on everyone in your county participating. There, for each person that is counted, is $1,626 per person, $1,626 per person that's counted. So if that person is not counted, that's money that the county will lose. So that's why we're trying to get all of the counties to meet with all of the trusted voices, to get everybody in the community to participate, because this is a big part of the 2020 census. And then the political aspect as well. We do have the House that I think Texas gained like four seats. North Carolina didn't gain any seats. Florida gained two, and I think Georgia gained two, and South Carolina gained two. So that's the political aspect of it. But we want to make sure this money is brought into the communities based on participation. And here, of course, North Carolina is right here, and this is just showing all of the, this is our region right here. But this is just showing the different states. And like I say, Texas, they received four seats based on their information from the 2010 census. Okay. I pulled up Duplin County's information. This is what we call a response rate. This is what where North Carolina was in 2000. 69% of the population participated. Very poor. And that was in 2000. And this is North Carolina as a whole. We did go up to 76% in 2010. Okay, so we came up some. This is Duplin County. You had 60% of your population that participated in 2000 in the census. And then you had 72%. So you did, you went up in 2010. However, the governor is asking that all counties get at least 80% or higher. So we still have some work that needs to be done. And this is what we call our response rate. This is how you performed in 2000. This is how you came up in 2010. And again, the governor is asking that all counties at least get 80% of participation or more. So as you can see, we still have some work to do. What we're trying to target right now is what we call our target populations. North Carolina did so poorly on these areas. These are our targeted areas that we're trying to do better for the 2020 census. One of them is the 0 to 5 age group. So what we're doing, we're going to all of the Partnership for Children, we're going to any organization, any business that has anything to do with children, we're meeting with them to make sure that they are our trusted voices and they help us to reach that age group because we did poorly, so we're trying to bring that up. And we lost a lot of money as a state, statewide, we lost a lot of money in that area. Our veterans, I'm not sure if y'all have a lot of veterans here in Duplin County, but that was also a low response as far as you did poorly in that area. People with disabilities, homeless. We've got to reach the homeless population. And this is where we go to the homeless shelters, we go to the soup kitchens and places like that in the different counties. People living in rural areas, I know you have people in rural areas and rural in this area. Low income, undeserved. Senior citizens is one of our main concerns. And that is, there's a lot of scams that are out there. And a lot of our senior citizens, they're even afraid to even, you know, want to do anything like a census survey, because they're afraid that it's a scam or something that's not real or what have you. So, but we want to reach our senior citizens. And one of the things that I've been telling a lot of my counties as far as this this age group is that now we're going to have three ways that you can respond to the census. Normally, we're doing something different for the 2020 census. Normally, you would respond just from the survey that they mail to you. This, for the 2020 census this time, we're going to have three ways you can respond. Because we're into technology, you can do it on your telephone device, your computer, or the regular mailed-in surveys. So, but with our senior citizens, we're trying to find an avenue to bring them together in one central location. So we're asking our trusted voices to get the libraries involved, because the libraries have computers, so that our senior citizens can be transported there in that one area, and we'll have volunteers to come in and help them, you know, if they have questions with completing the census information. And then, of course, our migrant farm workers, foreign-born immigrants. Now, I know you've been hearing a lot about the immigration, about that issue. That's a population that we did very poor on also. And a lot of the counties didn't do that well as well. So we need to make sure that we reach that population. What we're doing is meeting with a lot of those, a lot of the counties have organizations for Hispanics. And those organization leaders, we're meeting with those leaders to get that information across to Hispanics. Because they're into this trust issue right now, it wouldn't be wise for us to walk in with the government badge, because they're just not going to respect us at all. And it's understandable. And it's only because of what's going on right now, the political aspect of it. So, but that is a population that we have to reach. So we're doing a lot of focus on all of those areas right there. Those are what we call our target populations, because these are the areas that we did poor in, and we got to do better this time. Okay. Census Bureau collects a wide variety of data. A lot of the data, and the reason we do the 2020 census is because this data information is collected, and these are the areas that the data supports. So, and a lot of these areas is where funding comes in. So what we're doing as far as meeting these different groups and different populations, we're telling them the incentive of why it's important that they participate. Because we will have things that would be affected. Department of Social Service will be affected. Hospitals, that's where we get our money for our hospitals, our buildings. You know, a lot of the different, the school system, the school lunch program. That's how the kids get funded for the school lunch program. The schools get funded for that. So, and that's based on the data received from the 2020 census. So a lot of those areas will be affected if people do not participate. Privacy and confidentiality is one of the things that we're trying to stress as we meet with these populations, especially our Hispanic population and our senior citizens. $250,000 fine is on us if we give out any information. First of all, we're trying to get across the point across that when those surveys are mailed to an address, there's not a name. We don't know who you are. There isn't a name on the surveys. It's just a paper that's mailed to an address. So we don't even know who you are. But we have to take an oath that we cannot give any information out. It's a $250,000 fine. We can go to prison. I love the color orange, but it don't look good on me. So I'm not going to violate this at all. So we are serious about privacy and confidentiality. We're trying to get this across to our county managers, our city managers, that will meet with these trusted voices. This is very important. None of the information will be given out. We won't give out any information. And as I mentioned, we don't know any names. We don't know anybody. So this is very important, and we're trying to get that across. And again, if you have anyone calling you, asking you for your Social Security number, asking for money or donation or anything, something about politics or anything political, your PIN codes, anything, don't do it. It's a scam. So it's a scam. So, but we definitely believe in privacy and confidentiality. That's a must. The census data, as I mentioned earlier, are used in many ways. And these are just some of the ways that it's used. You know, our educational system, as I mentioned, healthcare, funding, federal funding is in all of these programs, transportation, social services, emergency responses. Funding, government funding comes in those areas, and all of that is based on the data that is received from the census. That's why we're trying to get this information across, how important it is to participate, that everyone should be counted with the census because of the areas that can be affected. We do have a geographic partnership program. All of the information, the data information is accurate. They look over that information. And even in the geographic area, now they just don't do the census information. And I was just speaking to a Hispanic last week, and she was saying that someone had already came out to her house and wanted to know how many kids were in her family. And she let them in, da-da-da-da, what have you. And that was an enumerator. That is from the census. However, what we're trying to get everyone to realize, there are different surveys that is going around, I mean, consistently. This is what we call the American Community Survey. So we don't want anyone to get it confused. The 2020 census is only done every decade, but this is done consistently. And so I mentioned to her and explained to her, this is what that survey was for. So we want to make sure we get that across. It's a difference. And the geographic department have a lot of ongoing surveys all the time. But the 2020 census is only done every decade. Again, as I mentioned, these are the new initiatives that we're going to do. This is something new we're trying. This is the first time we're doing this because everybody's into technology. But you can take the survey from your phone, the internet, or what have you, or it can be mailed to you. We're asking the local government and the city government to come together and form what we call a complete count committee. And that complete count committee, and I've already met with Mr. Brinson, and he's done an awesome job making sure that this county is represented the way it should be represented to make sure funding consistently comes into this area. He's done an excellent job with that. And we just want to make sure with that complete count committee, we want you to in that committee, have all of the trusted voices. We need someone from DSS, someone from health department, someone from daycare, someone from partnership with children. I'll be back in Duplin County tomorrow to meet with the director of partnership for children. But we want everybody represented in all of these governments. We don't want to miss any of these areas. And if you notice, faith-based, that's also, they have to be counted also. That's where we're going to get our senior citizens. They're going to listen to their pastors. They trust their pastors. So this is an avenue that will help us with senior citizens. But these are all of the areas in the community. We want everybody, all of the businesses, all of the organizations, everybody to come together in that complete count committee to make sure that everybody is counted. And those are our trusted voices. We also have a North Carolina State Complete Count Committee with Bob Coates. So the overall, and this is in your information also, that last, I think it's a booklet on the left, the right-hand side of the folder. It has information you can read later about the Complete Count Committee. And I put that in there because that's a very intricate part that we're asking for all of the counties to participate in. But we do want all of our state and local governments, businesses, community leaders, all community leaders to come together. And what we do, once that committee is comprised in that county, now you can have a complete count committee under the government, under the county government can have a complete count committee. And then the organizations, if they want to branch out on their own with complete count committees, they can do that as well. And what we do, we come out and train. We'll come out and train, we'll brainstorm and come up with ideas of how we're going to get everyone to make sure everyone is counted. So we're there all the way. So what we're asking for our county government, Governor Roy Cooper is asking that all county governors partnership with the U.S. Census Bureau. We're asking that partnership to be by way of a proclamation or a resolution, and we're asking that we partner together to make sure that we do this. We want funding to come into this county. We're trying to assist, and we want to partner with Duplin County to make sure that that funding is here and everyone is counted. We are hiring. We do have some flyers, and this is the information for hiring. North Carolina is hiring over 5,000 positions, I'm sorry. And it's not just positions for numerators, it's for administrators and management as well. So this is the information, and I did give, I think I put some flyers in your information as well. So I just wanted to let you know, let the county know that we are hiring over 5,600 positions. So this is the information for that. And it's work at home. Next. Okay, and these are just some of the positions. Just some of the positions. Census field manager, recruiting manager. So it's high positions, not just enumerators going from door to door. This is my information, my contact information. I can be reached, and Mr. Brinson does have my information as well. I did include my card within your packet. If you have any questions, if you should need me to present at any of the events, any of your local events that you have, festivals or what have you, I would love to come out. your faith-based organizations. I would love to come to your churches on Sundays to do a 3-minute presentation so that we can get everybody involved. Let's work together to bring the funds into this county. I'm sure you probably was hurt with the storm that we had last year and probably have some families that are displaced. Hopefully those families will be back into this area before April 1st because they have to be counted wherever they reside. So let's work together and we can do this together. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So in our packet there's a motion to, not a motion, in our packet there's a resolution to support the 2020 census partnership. There's a resolution to partner basically with the 2020 census and support them. If everyone has had a chance to read that, I would entertain a motion to approve it.
So moved.
Second. It's moved and properly second that we approve this resolution. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. Billy Yergin, good evening.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
And to the Board of Commissioners of Duplin County, my name is Billy Yergin. I'm a Methodist minister and a retired instructor, professor at Duke University, and have spent my career in the last 40 years working in education and legislation. And part of the bulk of that, most of that, has been dealing with one of your leading senators, Charlie Albison. I'm here to ask this board of commissioners to establish a resolution to submit a resolution to the North Carolina Department of Transportation to establish a 2-mile section of Interstate 40 in Senator Albison's honor. And for those of you who know Charlie Albison, you know what he has done for this community, for Eastern North Carolina, Duplin County, and for the entire state. But just to refresh your memory, first of all, he is the longest, or was the longest serving legislator from Duplin County all the way back to 1777. Secondly, Charlie has served the county as the agriculture chairman of the agriculture committee. He has secured over $1 million in money that came into this county to establish a Duplin County Civic Event Center. He is a primary sponsor of major renewable energy legislation, which is the first of its kind in the Southeast. He has been awarded numerous awards and of appreciation from the United States Department of Agriculture, agricultural organizations in our state, regions. Duplin County Board of Commissioners, chaired by the late Gerald Quinn, proclaimed May 25th of 1975 as Charlie Albison Day in Duplin County. He's been inducted into the Duplin County Hall of Fame, and I can go on and on and on about the accolades that Charlie Albison has got for his contribution, not just to Duplin County, but to Eastern North Carolina and to the entire state, for that matter. I happen to have had relationships with Charlie in the General Assembly as head of the North Carolina Sweet Potato Commission when I was there, and various and sundry other legislative matters. And Charlie has always been progressive, aggressive, and always had his eye on his home. And I'm asking you as a Board of Commissioners to submit a resolution again in support of establishing a 2-mile section of Interstate 40, specifically a mile east of exit 373 to a mile west of exit 373, which does not have a plaque honoring anyone for that matter. And I have several supporters here from the civic community, from the business community, service community, and I talked especially to Maya Van at Magnolia. She's writing a letter to the DOT in support of this effort. And I have given Mr. Brinson a copy of a resolution that I authored. And if you have it, if you don't have that, I'd be happy to share a copy with you right now.
I make a motion that we adopt the resolution.
Second.
We have a copy. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. It's been moved and properly seconded that we adopt a resolution in support of the proposal to name a section of Interstate 40 in honor of our retired state senator, Charlie Arbison. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Ms. Savoy.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm here on the agenda for two different properties that I have been received a negotiated bid for, and I wanted to see if this board wanted to authorize me to advertise it for upset bids. The first property is located off State Road 1347, known as Hill Street, Revell Road in Warsaw Township. This was purchased by the county in March of 2015 for $2,065.99. Miss Martha Camarillo, excuse me, offered to buy this property for $3,000. This is parcel number 01-E260. It has a tax value of $1,500. My office and the tax office is recommending that we accept this bid for advertisement. The second property is approximately a 0.5-acre lot off of a State Road 1102 on Charity Road. It's in Island Creek Township. This was purchased by the county on August 21st, 2013 for $4,686.15. The same individual is offered to purchase this property for $5,686.15. This is parcel number 09-E286. The tax value is $7,600. Again, my office and the tax office recommends that we accept this for negotiated bid and to advertise it for upset bids. And if you agree to that, we just ask that you do a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Mm-hmm. It's been moved and properly seconded that we approve the bids for these two properties and authorize the county attorney to advertise for the purpose of upset bids. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the county manager asked that you add an additional thing on. Can I go ahead and do that? My office was contacted by the county manager's office in regards to a request for an amendment to a resolution that was done by this board several years ago. I think the most recent, was back in 2012. It was in regards to a community reunion that's done every year the Saturday before Labor Day on Wellstown Road. Upon researching it and contacting the Department of Transportation, we determined that actually an ordinance needed to be done instead of a resolution. Jacqueline Fennell, who lives in Raleigh, has organized this community reunion for several years. I could saw it go back at least 10 to 15 years. As part of that, they need to block off traffic to Wellstown Road. The Department of Transportation has done this every year, and she wants to proceed and ask for it this year. The one change is that she wants it the same day, but wants the times to change from 10 p.m. to 6 p.m. change to 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. So I've drafted an ordinance that the Department of Transportation has required. I can read it to you. I know it wasn't early enough for you to get it into the agenda, but basically it allows for this ordinance to go into effect and recommends that the board authorizes that the Wellstown Road be shut down during that period of time. She has applied for the DOT permits and everything that's required. So if this board is in agreement, I'd ask that you pass a motion authorizing this ordinance to go into effect.
Entertain a motion.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and properly seconded that we adopt this ordinance that Ms. Savoy has outlined. Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Chestnut.
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'd like to request that you authorize me to enter into a contract with Tyler Technology to purchase ExecuTime software that was approved in the fiscal year 2020 budget. This is a time and attendance software that will hopefully combine the several different timesheet programs we use now. So this will replace the current paper timesheet program as we move into the payroll and human service and payroll and HR conversion that we're going to, which is the second phase of the current financial conversion. The cost of the software and the implementation is $52,044, and we were able to add that in this year's budget without any additional cost to the project because we saved that much and more in the first phase of the conversion when we did the finance conversion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
It's been moved and properly seconded that we authorize Ms. Chestnut to execute a software agreement with Tyler Technologies upon Ms. Savory's approval of the contract. Any comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Princeton. What we've all been waiting for.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I appear before you now along with Mr. Housen, the Director of Emergency Services. Dr. John Carnegie is also here. He is the Medical Director for our Emergency Medical Services System. I also have the Operations Officer, Mr. McMahon, here if you have any questions for him. But we're going to be presenting to you four different proposals for our EMS system that will hopefully allow us to alleviate some of the retention and recruitment issues that we are currently experiencing. I'm going to allow Mr. Houston to now go through the PowerPoint presentation, and then we will make ourselves available to answer any questions that you may have. Mr. Houston.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and board members.
Yes. Good evening. Good evening.
Mr. Brinson alluded to, I'm going to be here today to go through this PowerPoint presentation. What we have is a staffing shortage due to the non-competitive pay rates that we currently experience in our county as it falls to the paramedic through the basic levels. Basically, it's causing our staff to leave to go to other places to find employment that will better serve their families. There are currently 40 budgeted positions at the paramedic level, and currently only 23 of those are occupied by functioning paramedics in the field. Next slide. They're the 10 paramedics that have left recently, actually due for pay in the last 6 months. We've had 10 paramedics that have left this county. They've all left for better competitive wages, and that is one quarter of our budgeted positions. Loss of these paramedics have caused a severe staffing shortage, which has necessitated the use of either a lower level truck or a truck being completely out of service. On the next slide, you'll see where it talks about for the last 6 months, Medic 8 in Kenesville has been shut down a total of 88 times. Medic 8, or the Kenesville station, has been at a lower level 55 times. Medic 7 in Rose Hill has been shut down 12 times, has run at a lower level 53 times. No other unit has been shut down completely in the last 6 months, but others have been brought down to a lower level. Of the other remaining, those were the two that had the most, either the lower level providers or shut down. So when we looked at this, we looked at the area around us, that the counties that touch us as far as our paramedic pay. Duplin right now stands at $14.95 an hour. That is for your starting paramedic pay. Sampson is at $18.02, Lenore's at $18.05, Onslow's at $18.21, Jones at $16.80, and Wayne's at $16.25. So these have negative impacts on our system. They're often working longer shifts and or picking up extra shifts trying to keep trucks on the road. By doing that, they're causing increased stress on their sales and also greater fatigue. And then that will also lead to greater job dissatisfaction. They're more susceptible to suffering the effects of burnout and post-traumatic stress syndrome, which we know is one of the largest killers in EMS as a whole. Current pay rate also does not allow for the retention of newly hired paramedics. Essentially, we have paramedics that come out of paramedic school that will accept that $14.95 an hour that work here for 1 to 2 years, which is what a lot of other services require. So they come here to work for those lower wages for 1 to 2 years, and they move on elsewhere to somewhere else that will pay them a higher wage. So option one is the option that we present first, is that the 8 trucks stay in service at their current locations. That also includes a 17% pay increase for all field staff and 8% increase for administration staff to reduce compression. This option allows for full staffing of those 8 trucks as the current plan lays out. And this option is the far superior option because it is what the county is accustomed to and what they're used to. And that is the one that is endorsed by the Emergency Services Department.
Can you back that up? Okay, go ahead.
So when we look at the comparison, as you see here, the current staff with all benefits, as you see, we've got it broke down to supervisors, which are 4, and you have your paramedic budgeted positions, your advanced EMT, your EMT, your holiday pay, and your part-time, your admin staff. This is currently what they make now, and this is what it would move to with that 17% and 8% increase. It'll be a difference of, $443,211. And county funds is what it would cost for additional allocation of funds to fund that option. Then when we looked at it, it's only 0.76% of the overall fiscal year budget for Duplin County. Option number 2 includes 7 paramedic level trucks, so therefore we would have to take 1 truck off the road, but it would leave you with 7 paramedic trucks. This option is definitely not a recommendation because then we start to decrease the amount of services that are provided to the county. The next slide will show you the comparative rates as far as what the options will do as far as pay. Again, it's still staying at 17% for the field staff, 8% for the administrative staff. And then basically it will be a $112,000 needed funds and allocation to make that work. Option 3 would be 6 paramedic level transport trucks, and then you would have 2 QRVs that would supplement those districts that actually lost a transport truck. It's not an optimal solution, however, it does continue to offer 8 paramedic level units in every district as we currently have it laid out. Those 2 quick response vehicles will be placed in higher call volume areas to help assist with the fact that there's not a unit, so therefore at least a paramedic level provider can get to that patient within a reasonable amount of time. The next slide will show you again the salary comparisons.
All 4 options are showing the same percentage of rate.
Yes, sir. And that rate will actually bring them right up to a competitive rate of, right, I think the starting paramedic pay will be $17.45 an hour. It'll cost, again, $112,000 in added pay plus an additional $70,000, one-time cost of $70,000 to provide those 2 QRVs for those paramedics to work on. Option 4 would be 6 paramedic level trucks and 1 quick response vehicle stays in the county. It would not give the 8 paramedic level trucks or 8 paramedic level providers in the county. You go down, like I said, you drop from 8 transport trucks to 6. The next slide will give you the comparison rate of what that's looking at as far as current. And then, so this will actually cost no additional money from the county. The amount of savings that is brought in from the decrease in staff will allow for the raise plus the acquisition of a QRV.
Can you go back to comparison 3, Danny, for a minute?
Hold on.
go back one more. Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
So this is just a quick conclusion slide to kind of give it down to you. So as far as what it would cost the county and those options as a quick snapshot so that it has something for you to look at.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That's your last page, okay.
Yes, sir.
That's my last page. Okay, thank you for your time. And
Dr. Kennedy, you'd like to speak with y'all on that one?
Well, before we do that, I'll let you guys handle it how you want to. Does the board have any questions for Mr. House? Or are we going to put that all together with Dr. Kennedy? Let's do that. Come on up, Doc.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello. Recently, I started getting an email every Monday with a list of our higher acuity calls for review from the previous week. I try to review these so I can give our crew some updates on our patients, constructive criticism, or praise. One of the things I've also started doing was thinking what would have happened to that patient if they were in the back of my ambulance when I was a 19-year-old volunteer EMT in this county in 2002. For the true high acuity calls, the respiratory distress, the respiratory failures, cardiac arrhythmias, the STEMIs, the significant traumas, the patient usually would have died in the back of my ambulance. I think one of the best decisions this county has ever made was going to the paramedic level of service. Countless lives have been saved by that decision. But we are at a critical point in the life of Duplin County EMS. With the mass exodus of paramedics the past several months, most of which can be attributed to higher paying paramedic jobs in surrounding counties, we're going to have to make some important decisions on the future of this agency. As a county, we need to decide how truly important this 911 service is. The Board of Commissioners need to decide that. The citizens who vote for the Board of Commissioners need to decide that. Citizens who pay taxes to fund our county's budget need to decide that. I want to thank my administrative staff for putting in some long hours recently trying to figure out ways to solve some of our staffing issues. I also want to publicly applaud my field staff, who are the heartbeat of this service, for all their hard work the past several months, helping each other out, picking up extra shifts, working longer shifts, doing everything they can to allow this agency to continue to function at a high level. I want to especially thank the ones, several of who are in here tonight, who have stuck it out while we've been chronically understaffed. Your service is not going unnoticed. But what we have been doing recently is not sustainable long term. We have to do something to stop the bleeding, to stop the hemorrhaging of paramedics that we've had the past several months. If we don't do something soon, we're going to be back here in a few months discussing how we can try and operate an EMS service with 15 paramedics instead of the 23 that we have today. You can do that math. You'll be down to 4 to 5 paramedics a day to cover over 800 square miles of area. Let me be crystal clear here. When you get to that point, patient care will be compromised. People will die. Patients that we could save will die. We come to you tonight to start an ongoing conversation of potential solutions to these current issues. We feel that increasing our hourly rate will help retain some of our current staff, our EMTs, advanced EMTs, and our paramedics, as well as hopefully make us more competitive in the marketplace to recruit new staff. With the potential associate's degree requirement that is coming in 2023 for all new paramedics, as well as an overall shortage of paramedics statewide, recruitment and retention are not going to get any easier in the coming years. Mr. Housen has presented several options, potential ways to increase our hourly wages. Besides option one, none of these plans are perfect, and I suspect there will be some unforeseen difficulties with any of these other plans that we've not yet accounted for. If they are implemented, we'll have to address those as they arise. Let's be clear again. Any other option besides option one will be a form of cutting services to our citizens, and we are not excited about that. With that being said, we do feel that it's time to do something to address these staffing problems before it's too late. Whatever we do or don't do, my number one priority is to try and minimize any detriment to patient care. If we make any system plan changes, we'll be reviewing the data quarterly, time to first medical contact, on-scene time, transport time, back-in services times, etc., to see how it's affecting patient care, as we already do. Thank you for your time, your service, your continued support. We look forward to working towards a solution with the Board of Commissioners. Our citizens depend on it. This time we'll be glad to try and answer any questions you may have at this time. We'll also be glad to meet with you individually or as a group in any setting you'd like to have further conversations. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kennedy. Any questions?
Okay. Personally, I want to keep all eight stations. I think we need it. I think you do a great service. Question I have is, you're coming to us with the 17% increase, but you believe that that's going to make the difference because you think it's all about salary. Why did you not use the money we give you to do the merit raises?
The merit raises?
Yeah, everybody should have gotten a 4% increase. They're doing a good job. They got a 2% merit raise, and then we give the 2% COLA. So everybody should have just gotten a 4% increase. My understanding, we did not. And I'm just asking why.
As far as I know, the ones that got the number that was required in HR received their merit raise.
Do you know that number?
I do not, not off the top of my head, no sir.
What's the question?
The amount of employees that received the merit raise.
That received
2%. I don't know the amount that Gabe got the merit raise as far as the 1 or 2%. But I know the people that have contacted me, because I've not know any who got it, who didn't. I know when I saw the paper who got a raise, and I've actually been doing the 1, 2, 3, 4. But a lot of our employees, I can't give you the exact number, got at least a 3% raise. And that was a 2% COLA or even, and plus the 1%, if not the 2%.
You don't have those numbers?
No, sir, not off the top of my head, I do not.
That's great, Chief, but I didn't know you needed that tonight.
Would you like those numbers?
I'll pick them right now.
No, you don't have to. Would you like the numbers?
Sir?
Would you like the numbers right now? As long as I don't call it individual's name, I can give a total number, correct?
Say that again, I'm sorry, Mr. President.
As long as I don't call out anyone's name, I can give total numbers on how many got 2%, 1%,
1%. Yes,
sir. Just for your information, in 2018, and I want to make this clear to everybody, and I want to sentiment what Mr. Edwards says. I am not in favor, zero bit, of shutting down any stations. Eight stations are important, critical, and whatever we've got to do to keep it going, that's all I care about. Some statements have been made, and that the commissioners have not given a raise, have not given anything, but as a matter of fact, in 2016, the commissioners gave a 1% COLA. In 2017, the commissioners gave a 2% COLA. It was not until 2018 that we went to the merit-based pay. Now, the merit-based pay is not controlled by the commissioners. The merit-based, we provided the 2% so that management and supervisors could award that 2%. And for your information, in 2018, 66 people got merit raises or were qualified for it. You know how many got 2%? Zero. Seven people got 1%. And 59 people got 0%. In 2019, and granted that was under different leadership, in 2019, which is what we're talking about now, 68 people qualified for merit raises. 23 people out of the 68 got 2%. 16 people got 1%. 6 people got 0%. And 23 people were not eligible because they had just been hired within the year. So that is your numbers. And we've been getting a bad rap about this, but the 2% was budgeted in the budget for everybody. We didn't have a say or choice in who got that 2%. That was up to management. So I just wanted to make that clear.
And I'll just comment here. I'm not involved with any of the merit-based raises or any of that. I'm still not sure 2, 3, 4, 6% gets us competitive to surrounding counties, certainly for new hires. You saw the graph there. We're over, you know, a dollar less than what Jones County's offering.
I'm up to speed in that at all.
Certainly appreciate the board's good valid points, but just in the big scheme. But also, as far as recruiting further future paramedics, which, as Mr. Houston says, we have a pretty big gap right now, and the applications are not rolling in our office.
The thing that I would like to do, I see four proposals, but there's really only one proposal that will work for anyone. I wish that prior to all this, and I sentiment what Mr. Edwards says, if you really look at what happened last Monday night or 2 weeks ago when we gave the 2% increase to everybody $50,000 or below, and you have the opportunity for the other 2%, there's a hidden topic that's not talked about, and it is not money in each employee's pocket, but it is a real factor in this whole thing. We raised the taxes on the citizens of this county 2 cents. If you were there and you paid attention to the numbers during the budget hearing, when it was presented to us, the total figure was up like $410,000 to give a 2% raise to everybody across the board. All right. The commissioners saw that the insurance that we had for our employees was horrible. We made a decision as a group to get better insurance for our people, for all of you guys sitting out here. The numbers brought to us were $850,000 to $1 million to give you better insurance. Bills weren't getting paid. People were getting collection letters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we knew we had to address that. So we did that with the 2 cent increase. Well, if you look at the real numbers there, that 2 cent that we passed on to the taxpayers benefits every employee in this county, including the EMS employees. So you take that based on percentage-wise versus what you were looking at COLA. That's an additional 4% in real cost to the county that were passed on to the employees. So the opportunity was there based on the merit that it was an 8% swing in real money. If we would have upped the insurance and done like most businesses and governments, we would have gotten you better insurance because people were complaining about it, but yet we would have turned around and passed the cost on to you and your paycheck. In other words, they would have taken more out of your paycheck. Well, if you would have done that, that 2% COLA or that 2% increase that you got, it would have washed it out. Go home, do the math. Real money to the county, real money. On July 1st of 2019, 8% is what it was. Now, the 2%, we gave the increase. The 2% merit, that's subjective to management. We can't control that. Now, as Mr. Edwards alluded to, really the opportunity was there for 4%. And so, in my opinion, and you know, we can use it for argument's sake or whatnot, we made a move to help the situation. Do I think we're there? No. No. I do not think we're there. But all we see is one option. And I've run the numbers. I'll be honest, I did not get the actual breakdown of this until Friday. And I've run the numbers, and you know, it's something that I believe that should have happened long before now instead of all of this. our management and this board should have sat down at the table like grown men and grown women and come up with a solution. If that would have happened, I don't think we would be in this room tonight discussing it, because I think there would have been a solution that everybody can live with. And I'm in total agreement to sitting down with management and with our leaders and us all sit at the round table, look each other in the eye and throw out the options and then see what is best for everybody. You know, we've been getting bashed in social media that we're going to shut down stations. Nobody knows what we're going to do, because I did not have the information until Friday. It came through email on Monday afternoon, this plan. I was not here at the last meeting. I do have a business, and it is agriculture related, and I couldn't be here. But the actual information was given to us 2.5 to 3 hours before the meeting, and you're expecting us to make a decision on $500,000 in that short period of time? That's not smart business for anybody. So I respectfully ask that you three gentlemen facilitate a meeting with our county manager and all of us in a closed room, and let's hash this out and let's do what we got to do to take care of these people.
Yeah, I think a few comments to that. First off, we welcome that conversation, and that's what we're here tonight, just like when we didn't present it 2 weeks ago because we didn't have all representation here. But we, as we said, we weren't expecting to make any major moves or motion on that. These are big decisions to make. We welcome the conversation. We're opening it up. As I said, we want to work with the board for this. I also say, getting back to the countywide, you know, raises, and again, I'm not involved with the merit raises and any of that, but I'm going to take off Dr. Carnegie Medical Director hat, and I'm going to put on John Carnegie, Duplin County Taxpaying Citizen here hat for just a minute. And I think the county offers a lot of very important services. From my personal standpoint, I'm going to make the argument that EMS and the Sheriff's Department, public safety, are going to be at the top of my list. This is not, you know, saying this from an administrative standpoint. When I call 911 and I need that fire truck, that ambulance, or that sheriff's, I need them there, I need them there, I need them competent, and I need them there quickly. And so, just, you know, we've obviously got a problem here. I think we all agree on that. I think we all agree that we want to work towards the same solution. We welcome those conversations. This is an opportunity just to start the conversation, not expecting that we're going to, I don't think any of us had any thought that anything was going to be definitively determined tonight.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions? All right. And just so whoever's listening or whoever's watching or whoever's present, there's no item for us to decide tonight on the agenda. This is strictly a presentation for us to get into the mode of discussing this. I want to discuss this with our county manager. Legally speaking, we can't get in the room all five of us with you three gentlemen, so we have to do that in a public setting, but we can do it individually if we need to, and that may be the better route. But thank you for your presentation. This certainly will be addressed. I do have a question. And the reason I have it is because I think you said before, Mr. Brinson, that there are paramedical problems, not just in Duplin County. I mean, there's problems getting paramedics to work. Is that right?
Yes, sir. There is a statewide shortage of paramedics.
Okay.
Not in certified paramedics, no, sir. If you look at the numbers, there are plenty of certified paramedics. However, there is a shortage of active paramedics on rosters that are working as a paramedic in the state.
So, option one, which would cost the county more money, but would also keep everything at what it needs to be, according to your opinion and common sense, what if it doesn't work? What if we do option one and we're still 17 paramedics short? What would be your next recommendation? How are we
going to
handle that?
I think that's a great question. I think until you can fix that, it's hard to look at the next other problems. And then you have to look at yourself as an agency to see if there's other problems in the agency. And then you also have to continue to look, why aren't we competitive with other counties surrounding?
Three, you feel confident that the primary reason is just because of our non-competitive wages, you know, compared to our...
I would say that's the number one reason in my book, Brandon.
Absolutely. I mean, I think competitive wages is a major reason why. I mean, we talk to people all the time to leave, and I've got some resignation letters that we can show you. I mean, they leave for better pay. I mean, and that's probably, I'd say 80% of the last ones that left for better pay.
There's occasional other reasons, certainly, but I think the salaries are the biggest driving force in that.
Okay. And I just wanted to clarify something. Whatever, you know, the longer we drag this out, the longer it's going to take to fix this problem. We make a decision tonight on how to do something. You're looking at 6 months, or not 6 months, but you're looking 3 to 4 months for us to even talk about getting fully staffed with us hiring, going through a clearing process and all that. So this problem is not going to be fixed overnight.
Clearing process is variable depending on if they're a fresh paramedic or if they are an experienced paramedic, come from another agency. They have to do some written exams. They have to be hired. They have to do oral boards with myself and our training officer. And then we ultimately determine after those a certain amount of calls they have to do in the county that are essentially chaperoned by another paramedic. A new paramedic that we normally have traditionally done 40 ALS level calls before we allow them to treat your family member can take anywhere from 4 to 6 months, sometimes takes more. A hired paramedic who has experience and can bring us 20 ALS level calls from another agency can usually get by to 10 to 20 once they kind of learn the operational changes from this county compared to other counties.
One more question just for information's sake only. What is the percentage of ALS calls versus BLS calls? What do they average?
Yeah, and Mr. Casey, our training officer, is back in the back too. I think traditionally when we look at that at our peer review, which we do quarterly with the state office of EMS, and then we also have county representation there, somewhere to between 10 to 15% of our calls are usually ALS level call. We get called out to close to 10,000 calls a year. We transport less than that. There's some people that don't allow them to be transported. So that's your true ALS level calls. And how many of those could be, some of those could be still managed by an advanced EMT, an EMT intermediate. But you're still stuck with 1,000 to 1,500 probably ALS level calls a year. And some of those are really, really critical patients that if you don't have the paramedical assessment, that their lives will be lost. That, Mr. Casey, Mark, do you have any? Is that pretty accurate? Sorry, Mark.
So, and that goes for more for the treatment by a paramedic. The paramedic level assessment, which is what ultimately everybody really wants, where we can really determine whether or not they need any further treatment, is what all the citizens are really looking for. And that's probably safe to say more than half of the calls that we go on really require that paramedic in-depth paramedic level assessment to get toward that treatment.
One thing I was going to add was that when we talk about ALS versus BLS, it all depends on whether you want to talk about strictly treatment or assessment or life-saving skills, such as defibrillation, cardioversion, surgical cryos, or do you want to just talk about different medicines that we can use. It would truly be hard to break it down without having some concrete definers of what you're considering BLS versus ALS.
Like I said, the last thing I'm going to say about it is I want to get there. I want to get there, and I want to get there quickly. But it's going to take a team. I feel like we can get there, but we all need to sit down.
I'd like to talk with you about it some more. You might want to do that with every commissioner and these folks and see what we can work out. But I think we need to make a decision. Really, within the next 30 days, I think. Okay. Is everybody okay with that?
Yeah, sooner than later. I mean, we need to get it worked out. We want all eight stations, or I do, and I think the majority of the commissioners do.
If you'd like me to, I'll start facilitating meetings between myself, the board, and the admin staff, and Dr. Carnegie from EMS, but we can only have two of you in the room at the time. We can't have a quorum present. Do public meetings.
Well,
if that's how you want to do it, or do you want to do it individually, we can do it either way.
That's up to the commissioners and you gentlemen. I don't know how many times you want to sit in a room with all of us.
Whatever you guys say.
I'm here to do whatever so we can get it worked out.
Okay. I've got a question. You presented us
long
with.
The line is not Friday and Thursday.
All right, go ahead.
You presented us with four options on paper.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, I thought of different options besides what you have here. I looked at everything you had, and I've had discussions about it with different people. And just like I think every member on this board wants the, you know, the aid station that we have, and were there any other options that you had besides these four? Because really you didn't. When I looked at it, the only thing I saw was one option. After I read through it, I said, you know, you put option one, two, three, and four, and you said option two, three, and four was not even considered. So really, you gave us one option, but were there other options that you discussed that you did put on paper?
The only reason that that is because once you start going away from that aid stations, we start cutting services, and there's the possibility that there's going to be detriment to patient care because we're decreasing the amount of available resources. And that's what we're trying to stay away from, and that's why when we looked at this, there was ideas thrown about as far as lower level transport trucks with paramedic chasers and things of that nature and QRVs. However, when we looked at it, that's going to do nothing but increase cost because you have to buy vehicles for those QRVs and things like that. So we were trying to stay as close to what we have currently without trying to impact the budget so much.
The farther we get away from the eight ambulances, paramedic ambulances, gives me more and more trepidation as far as the clinical care we're going to be able to provide.
My question was, were there other options that you discussed besides?
Yeah, I think you can fine-tune those options, and we're not married to necessarily those four. There are continued options. You could look at a lot of different options. I don't know how many options we want to. I mean, we could discuss 10 options. There was some other brief discussion on something similar to what Bob was saying there. But at the end of the day, the administrative staff here thought that these were the best four options to present.
Okay, because, you know, when I looked at it, I thought about salaries. I thought about scheduling. I thought about the, you know, reorganizing the way you operate your business. I mean, you know, you got one way to do things, but were there other options that besides scheduling or...
When we say scheduling, you could possibly talk about peak time trucks and things of that nature.
Or specifically the fire. Yeah, so I think also, the other thing that was discussed was the firehouse schedule, all right, which for people that don't know is what Wayne County does. I think a lot of our current staff, we've had discussions on this. Mr. Brinson's been involved with some of those discussions with our staff at Con Ed meetings. A lot of our, that essentially goes down to from four shifts to three shifts, maintains your eight paramedic level trucks. A lot of our staff who have been here for a while, one of the only reasons they are staying is for our current schedule. I think you will have a mass increase in the exodus.
I really don't want to get into a discussion about it now because we're going to do that later.
Sure.
Away from here, because nothing can, just like I told you before, when I, you know, talked about it 2 weeks ago, before the end of the fiscal year, you know, I knew that we weren't going to come up with anything to put in place before the end of the year. But, you know, if we can do something in 30 days, maybe 60 days, but, you know, we just don't know right now. But we have to discuss it, and I think it's, we're all willing to sit down and discuss it and come up with a viable solution.
Thank you all for your presentation tonight.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
So let's facilitate some meetings. How about that? Okay. I don't want to be a meeting with Dick. Okay.
The quicker the better for everyone.
All right, with that being said, I realize that this is a very important topic and a very serious issue and potentially a life-saving issue, so I take that very seriously, and I presume and I'm very confident that all the members of this board and our staff do as well. Let's move along. It's almost past my bedtime.
Okay.
Let's go.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I appear before you now to present for your consideration a contract for lawn care maintenance. The County Building and Facilities Maintenance Department has two groundskeeper positions. We have had a lot of difficulty in the last few months recruiting applicants for groundskeeper positions. Therefore, I challenged our maintenance and facilities director, Mr. Norwood, to go out for bids for lawn care service just to see how much it would cost to bid it out versus trying to fill these two positions. He did that. We received bids from various entities. A bid opening was held on June 28, 2019, and Nelson Baker, doing business as Baker's Lawn Care, was low bidder in the amount of $29,997. Each of the groundskeeper positions' salary alone cost $24,513. That would total $49,026, not including benefits. So I believe it behooves us to enter into a lawn maintenance agreement with Nelson Baker, doing business as Baker's Lawn Care, in the amount of $29,997.
Motion to approve.
Second.
So moving properly second that we enter into a contract with Nelson Baker, DBA Baker's Lawn Care, in the amount of $29,997 for lawn care services. And allow me to sign the same questions. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
We have two closed sessions.
Okay. No other announcements?
I do not at this time.
So we do have two matters for closed session. I will entertain a motion to leave open session and go into closed.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and properly seconded that we go into closed session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.